Hey guys, welcome back to Campaign War Stories. I'm Wesley Donahue, and today I'm joined by Adam Piper, who has been my friend for well over 20 years now. We've got a lot of crazy stories to tell, including some antics from college, so I think you'll really enjoy this one. All right, Piper, I've been really looking forward to this one. How's it going?
Going well. I'm not sure if this is better sober with some pub politics action.
I know. I literally just told my wife I wanted to have a couple beers before this, but I'm trying not to drink. For the listeners, let me just say this. I'm recording from home today, and my three little boys just got home from school. I have forced them outside, but I very seriously doubt they'll stay outside for 30 minutes. So we'll see how this goes, man. You know how that life is too, right?
I know. With a 4 and 6 year old girl, I get it.
I don't know. The difference is three little boys are nuts and they're beating each other up. There's always blood somewhere. Your girls are a little calmer.
Just noisier.
Well, man, all right. I've been really stoked about you coming on because you and I go way back, like way, way back. You're probably my oldest political friend. How did we meet? Tell folks how you and I met.
So I was a teenage political high school Republican chairman nerd. And I was looking at colleges and somehow politics weighed into it. And Wesley Donahue was a college Republican chairman for South Carolina.
Yep.
So this is the fall of 2001. This is actually probably before September 11th. And so I had applied to football and politics was in my college decision-making matrix. And so I literally pulled a list of contacts for each state. You know, people running for office, college Republican chairs, reached out as teenage Republican chairman, blah, 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 blah. And two people from the state of South Carolina responded to me, who are still friends today, Wesley Donahue and Ed McMullen.
Nice. Nice. Love Ed. I didn't know he was one of them. That's awesome.
And Ed was running for Secretary of State. And if we think about it, probably the best thing to happen to Ed McMullen was losing to Mark Hammond.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the man became ambassador to Switzerland. I feel bad. I missed my opportunity to, you know, go in and visit someone who's a friend who's also an ambassador, which is also weird that you're like friends with an ambassador, right?
Like COVID ruined my chance to do so. So I'm right there with you. So,
I know. I was trading emails and Facebook messages with them about it. And then COVID hit and just screwed up everything.
So for listeners back home, that's literally 23 years ago.
Wow. That's insane. So I remember, you were like 17 years old. Maybe I don't even think you were 18 yet. No, you definitely weren't 18 yet. And you came in as like a teenage Republican and you drove or flew down to Columbia and met me. And I was like, wow, this is like kind of crazy. This kid like is coming to visit us because he wants to be part of the South Carolina Republican Party. And you came.
I came. I think I was 17.
Wow. And then, so you obviously come to USC. I was, you know, college Republican chairman, state chairman. And that's when you and I started getting in all kinds of crazy trouble.
And for listeners back home, South Carolina was a little bit different politically then. Jim Hodges was in the governor's mansion.
Mm-hmm.
We have a competitive U.S. Senate race. And probably my favorite debate of all time between Lindsey Graham and Alex Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Fritz Hollings. So you have a Democrat U.S. Senator. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, it feels like ancient times. Look, it is. I turned 40 yesterday, so it is ancient times.
Oh, happy birthday, brother.
You have a Democrat governor. You have a Democrat superintendent of education. You have a Democrat U.S. Senator.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in side wars and everything else. And there's this debate. I think maybe we shouldn't go there.
It's okay. I don't mind at this point. Like I'm like, you know, George W. Bush, who said, when I was young and stupid, I was young and stupid.
I'm not talking about you and me in the sign war. I'm talking about how pissed off we made Alex Sanders and what Sanders said to Lindsey Graham in WIS Studios.
At that point, I was actually hired by the CRNC to be a field rep for the Victory Program. So I wasn't just a volunteer at this point. I was working for Victory, which was to help Lindsey Graham get elected to the U.S. Senate, Mark Sanford to the governor's mansion. So that was 2002. Okay.
2002. And I was a quasi super intern, freshman in college. Ed Matricardi came in to run the executive director of SCGOP. And I came from Virginia, where I'd interned for Ed at the Virginia GOP.
Yep.
And so Wesley and I were, I don't know, I think there were some chips on the shoulders of others.
Because
you and I were bouncing between Constant Car Wash and Lady Street, and everyone else was stuck with dead rats literally in the roofs in the stench of them in Constant Car Wash.
I don't think it was a rat. I think it was something bigger, like a raccoon. But I remember, we walked in that day, and you couldn't walk in. It was the worst stench we had ever heard or smelled. We couldn't work out of there for days. And we came and found a pest control person or air conditioner person, I don't remember which, and they found a dead raccoon in the air conditioning duct.
So for
the place was nasty.
Constant Car Wash was the best car wash in Columbia. There's a random office building that was the Victory headquarters for the Midlands.
Yep.
And you, me, a few others.
Michael Rentiers worked in there.
Scott Farmer was working out of there.
Andrew King, I think, was in there.
King, probably were spending, in between class, we were probably spending 10, 12, 14 hours a day in there.
Absolutely. We lived there.
And, Lady Street was the old headquarters prior to where the party is now, almost over to Main Street. But Lady Street was this ivory tower.
It really was. And, calling you a super intern is almost light. I mean, you were full time, basically. I mean, you were really trying to make a name for yourself, and there was no college Republican or nobody your age in the entire state of South Carolina that was working as hard as you were for the Republican Party at that point.
And so this is 2002. So Sanford wins the governor's mansion. Actually, I'm trying to remember what he said to us. But remember when we heckled Jim Hodges as become a good friend?
Yeah.
So you and I heckled Hodges, and Hodges made some comment to us along the lines of, but I'm the only one in the race who's a Gamecocks fan. Is that what he said to us?
So, yeah, that's what he said.
But something along the lines of kind of take it easy,
He came on the show. And he is just the best, dude. He is the nicest guy. And it's you kind of start regretting some of the stuff we did back in the day. Because at that point, you and I were just drinking all the time, partying all the time. I mean, all we did, we didn't even study. All we did was drink our faces off and watch college football and work on political campaigns. So when you're at that age, and you're doing sign wars, and you're dressing up in costumes and parades and you aren't light on the opposition, right? There's no gentlemanliness on the way we approach that. I mean, we were balls to the wall, all out, crazy college kids.
And it was actually a Republican versus Democrat race. I mean, people, parties were actually spending money on sides of the aisle, if we remember, to think about it, which seems like ancient history. And I mean, we had, where was the storage unit that Dargan and Haskins had collected, I think, every Hodges sign in the state?
But they just took them all down. And you've never seen anyone steal signs like this before.
These were yellow and black signs, and Governor Hodges, Wesley and I apologize. We had no oversight of these two super interns, and we'll protect their first names. But they found out, or we found out, that there were a total of 2,500 or 5,000 Hodges signs. And literally every one of them ended up in a storage unit, somewhere in South Carolina. Never happened before. We had one kid who literally signed up to be a Democrat just to take all their signs. Because we thought yard signs won races. And I think that's probably an episode beyond campaign war stories, that for candidates, yard signs are mind games. They do not win elections. So that might get us out of 2002.
That's right. And then, we obviously were against each other in 04, but between 02 and 04, you tried to replace me as college Republican chairman. Now, at this point, you and I are like tied at the hip. We're best boys. If you see Wesley, you see Piper. And like there's zero daylight between us. But it turns out that as chairman, I pissed off a lot of people. And then you ran to replace me. And we're talking state chair.
You're correct. And I had a decent enough coalition. It was not the supermajority. We probably didn't do our best job of counting ahead of time.
That's right.
And neither one of us had read a Dale Carnegie book at this point in our of how to win friends and influence people. And Wesley goes in there and gives a nominating speech that was about as gracious to college Republicans as Joe Biden's State of the Union was the Republican Party last week. This was not come join us unification speech. This was a line in the sand. And either you basically want to work or you're a bunch of losers. And the reality is to everyone else in the room, no one wanted to put in the work of the, quote, super interns. Everyone else just wanted it for their law school applications and everything else.
That's right. Because you and I, Dargan, JK, some other guys, I mean, we were college Republicans. I mean, we worked our asses off. And then you had these other kids that were just kind of these like pretentious rich kids who would show up in their khakis and blazers to victory parties, but didn't knock on doors, didn't make the phone calls, didn't do the work, right? So we had these chip on our shoulders, and I basically went in, nominated you, and gave the speech from like half baked, which was like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, you're cool, and fuck you. And it was, it went over about as well as a fart in church.
Yeah, I'd say maybe a wet fart in church.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a shark.
Yeah.
The funny thing about that is you think back to other people in the room, we still deal with some of those people.
I know. And I'm embarrassed about it. You know, 44-year-old Wesley looking back, you know, company of 90 people, three kids. I'm an adult, middle-aged man. You look back and you're embarrassed by a lot of moments in your life. And that will definitely go down as one of the things I regret the most and that I'm embarrassed about. I might have even been drunk given your nomination speech. I would not be surprised if I wasn't.
Yeah, and there's a whole other chapter going on there that would probably lead me to think there had been some Jim Beam involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're not,
we can't go there.
For your protection.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're probably, I think I know what you're talking about now. And, well, you lost. Badly, I think.
No, I knew, I basically had counted the votes and took some cop out with whatever the kid's name was from Furman, Austin. I'm trying to remember what his last name.
I don't remember.
And basically that I would be the state vice chair, but the convention chair for the CRNC.
Okay.
So I took whatever that was. And then that's the whole episode of the CRNC where Strom had died.
Yep.
And we had the resolution to commemorate Strom, and the CRNC did not want it. If you remember this. And
I remember.
Basically, I don't know, there's some other South Carolinians who were, and it's comical to think about it, like Sally Atwater Sr., you know, rest in peace, called Karl Rove and said, like, they're not letting them commemorate Strom. Like, you can't speak to the College Republican National Convention. And ooh. So like, things had gotten blown completely out of proportion. So we were able to read the whatever resolution we had passed at the CRNC, and we thought we were dealing like model Congress when in fact we were, you know, we were playing, you know, horseshoes and you know, beer can grenades.
Well, I will issue my public apology 20 something years later to Adam Piper. I'm sorry I cost you the chairmanship of the South Carolina College Republicans. That was before I was smart strategist, Wesley, and I was just drunk, knock on every door, Wesley.
I accept your apology. It's really not needed. You know, that's like, I mean, that's like basically telling someone I apologize for not making you king of the nerds at one point in your life.
Well, still, I still regret my, I regret everything I did that day. But
the listener, this is Russell House. We're now into 2003, and we're not even going to get to 2010 probably, because we're now at 17 minutes and we covered 1 year.
Well, we get to, you know, 2004, and you and I split ways, not in friends, but I got hired for then Congressman Jim DeMint. And yeah. You made... Okay.
You got hired for Charlie Condon.
Did I?
Yeah.
So we remember that.
But we were both on board with Charlie Condon for U.S. Senate.
Okay.
And then DeMint hops in and Beasley hops in. And that's where... And
that's right.
I was on the phone with Charlie Condon earlier today. So again, these are relationships. So to young guys listening at home... You know, these relationships stick with you, even though you think they're just college Republican, you know, relationships back to the early stages of your career.
Well, I will also go ahead and just say this while we're giving out advice. Our line of work is nothing but relationships. It's not about, you know, I wish it was about winning races. It's not. It's not about winning awards. It's not even about doing the best creative. The way to succeed in politics is by having as many strong relationships as you possibly can. And it starts the minute you enter politics. So if that's college Republicans, then it starts when you're 18, 19 years old. So you'll learn from me and being the drunk guy that goes in and pisses everybody off. Instead, you need to be the guy working your ass off, really impressing people and making friendships, because those friendships last 20, 30 years in this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're a drunk idiot, it takes a decade, two decades to fix that. You know, it wasn't until, despite working with Lindsey Graham in 2002, it wasn't until 2020 that we worked with Lindsey Graham, because his team still remembered 20, 21, 22-year-old drunk Wesley. It wasn't until two decades later that they started looking at me as somebody different.
And that's the up and downside of being a teenager or college Republican, is you have people that forever remember you from that first impression.
That's right.
Karen Floyd's a perfect example with her magazine. She forever remembers me as a 24-year-old vice chair, mm-hmm. not as a 40-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
Some people age and mature, but I think back to that Beasley to Mint race, this is, to me, the race no one talks about in the annals of the South Carolina Republican Party. Mm-hmm. This primary was probably a defining moment that set course the next 10 years when you look at the party from apparatus and everything else.
Yeah. So
you have a 7-way primary. You have former Governor David Beasley, high floor, low ceiling. Jim DeMint coming out of Greenville. And this is before mm-hmm. Greenville was a power base within the party.
Mm-hmm.
You have former Attorney General Charlie Condon, who had been the third place finisher for governor close by, you know, previously. You mm-hmm. have this upstart scion of the Ravenel family, some guy named Thomas Ravenel, who went on to social media fame, probably has more social media followers than any name we've mentioned so far. You have, who else? We've gone through the top four. You had...
I don't even remember anybody else.
Mark McBride with that great... The bobbleheads.
That's right.
Orly Benny Davis, that woman from Hilton Head.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting one more. So you have a 7.
Yeah, there was one more.
Beasley wins with 38%. And DeMint narrowly edges Ravenel. And I'm 20 years old. And somehow I'm in charge of election day operations, essentially in the Beasley headquarters or the spreadsheet, which I don't even think I'd ever put a 20-year-old in charge of it, except for come to find out years later, they all thought I was 25, but I never went to class. And I was just in the Beasley headquarters. But the Beasley to Mint race was, I mean, it was heated.
Well, I would say.
And the elements of it go back to Bush McCain. There's a lot of elements to it. So I'll go your side of it to get to a personal story there.
Yeah, but, I mean, but like, you know, it was McCain had the Quinns. Yeah. Bush had the Warren Tompkins side of things, which eventually became First Tuesday Strategy. And this is where you and I split, because you went towards, and look, we should also say that at that point in South Carolina politics, this was like two warring mobs. This was like mafias. This was like the mafia side of politics. These two rival gangs, mobs, hated each other with a passion. And it started with presidential. It goes down to this U.S. Senate race we're going to talk about. But the entire state legislature was divided between these two. I mean, these things went down to like city council and county council races. These people absolutely hated each other. And then I end up siding with the dement team, with the Warren Tompkins crowd. And then you go the other complete side. So we're like best friends working for two rival mobs.
And our way into these quote rival mobs have nothing to do with the mobs. It has everything to do with the opportunities on these two Senate races.
Yep.
Because there were only two kind of quarterbacks among the 20, 22, 23-year-old sex at the time.
Yeah. And you went with Beasley not because you cared about the Quinns. I went with DeMint not because I cared about the Warren Tompkins crowd. You went with Beasley because he was a popular governor and who you thought would win. And I went with Jim DeMint because when I looked at the numbers and I looked at the upstate, I thought he could win.
And Beasley doesn't get in the race till January or February. And it was Clint Leach, who's now the deputy commissioner of agriculture, who dragged me to this guy from the PD's rally.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't heard, David Beasley, who ended up being the World Food Program director and now is teaching at USC, I'd love to be in a David Beasley law school class. But David Beasley can give one of the single best speeches I've ever heard a politician give.
Yeah.
And that includes any presidential candidate I've worked with. So anyways, we're into 04. So I think the moment to me when you said, hey, share a story, is we're in the middle of this knockdown, dragout fight. And so this would be like some mob show and one guy from the other mob coming to the other mob's bar restaurant because Silver Elephant was coming up. You, at this point in time, had already tied your bow tie once for your wedding, did not know how to tie a bow tie. I don't think I've worn a bow tie other than with a tuxedo since 2004. You probably own 20 times the number of bow ties I own, which I own two right now. And so you're in the parking lot of the Beasley headquarters, and I'm tying your bow tie in the parking lot. And
that's crazy.
You would have thought, because the amount of like the reaction I got was, you know, do you think Wesley bugged our parking lot? Do you think this? Like, no. Like, we're probably going to go have a case of Bud Light, you know, after the Silver Elephant, or at least try to get Sonny to let us steal one leaving, leaving the Coliseum. And we never stole it. Sonny didn't have any use for it. It was always gracious to college Republicans.
Yeah.
But it was like a cardinal sin to have you come to the parking lot to tie your bow tie.
They didn't understand how close of friends we were. One correction is my wedding was actually after that. Because, it's, so you and I were against each other in 04. And then, you know, remember my mom died like 3 weeks before the election. That's one thing you and I have in common. I always kind of joked about the Dead Moms Club. It's, by the way, how you get over those kind of things. Just by joking around. I know it's morbid. But so mom dies 3 weeks before the election. We have the election, DeMint wins, and then that February, so 3 months later, I get married. So I get married on Defusky Island, which is this, an island you can't drive to. You got to have a boat. And you and I rode around on a golf cart the day of my wedding, and we got drunk. We started drinking at like 11 in the morning. We drank all day long. And I remember you and I stopping at this like Geechee woman's like trailer who was selling homemade wine out of 2-liter Coca-Cola bottles. Remember this? There was a giant.
This is literally blackberry wine.
Yeah.
Blackberry moonshine.
Yep.
It kind of made you hallucinate a little bit.
And because there was that big piece of plywood that was strapped to her gate, and it was spray painted on it, homemade wine, $20 a bottle. and you and I got drunk off of wine from a 2-liter Coke bottle. And then I'm like 30 minutes before the wedding starting. I couldn't tie my tie. So I'm running over to your cabin, knocking on the door. We're both drunk at this point. Adam, help me. Help. I got to tie this tie. And I'm walking down the aisle in 30 minutes. And you had to tie my bow tie before I walked down the aisle.
And I think there's a seminal moment before here, which was where you were far smarter than me, which was you were staying on my couch in Five Points.
Yep.
This is somewhere between Election Day of 04 and January of 05.
Yep.
You're sitting on the couch and actually you're recruiting someone to run for lieutenant governor. So
that's exactly why I was in Columbia. And I didn't have the money to get a hotel room. So I slept on your couch. You and J.K. Chady had a house, apartment together.
A place in Five Points. And I had just written the petition of the student senate to bring something called the Facebook to the University of South Carolina. And at this time, there was no Facebook.com. It was thefacebook.com.
That's right. I wanted
to be friends with anyone from any other schools. You know, I saw this from friends who went to Georgetown and UVA that summer in D.C. And so we had to write this petition. And it was Adam Hark, it was Nicole Lodine, Tommy Preston, Alan Klump, a few others, and I wrote this petition. And to Zuckerberg's credit, at this point in time, it was a 100-page petition. You had to list every club, every dormitory. Like, it was a legit privacy-centric company at this point in time.
That's right.
There is not now. So, you know, you can follow litigation and congressional hearings otherwise. And so Wesley sees this and was like, this has all sorts of business aspirations.
Yep.
I was like, no, this is just, you know, like, this has political messaging conversations. And so you were already on the business messaging side of it. I was on the apparatus. One of us was smart enough to make a business out of it. Other was dumb enough not to say, yeah, you're right on this portion because other things are going on. So, okay, who are you recruiting to run for what office and what happens in 05?
That's right. And I remember you were doing the petition. So fast forward like 3 or 4 months later, the Facebook, you got it at the University of South Carolina. I'm still asleep. So I recruited this guy to run for lieutenant governor, Mike Campbell, son of former Governor Carol Campbell. But I was still living in Somerville with my wife, so I was having to drive up every week. You were letting me sleep on your couch for free like 3 nights a week. And you got Facebook and then you showed it to me. You were like, Wesley, look at this thing called the Facebook. And I was like, well, how do I get on? So then you and I dug up my former college email address, which I still had access to, and you were the one that got me on Facebook. And then that's what started my interest in what is now Push Digital.
So I
took you down in the College Republican race, and your way of repaying me was to show me Facebook, which started my business. So look at that. You're a damn good friend.
There you go. So for those keeping score, we're at 30 minutes. We've covered 4 years.
Well, we don't have much more time. Tell me, so what are you doing these days, man?
I have a little single shingle, myself, a couple others, using the same skills as politics for public-private partnerships. So a few cool things with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, NFL alumni, a few other things. But the one that's taking up the most time right now is something I've co-created called Coaches Versus Overdoses. And so we have about 20,000 high school coaches nationally who are willing to help tackle the overdose and opioid crisis. So every 4.5 minutes, so for and this is an issue near and dear to your heart, every 4.5 minutes, so those at home, that's literally 10 people during the course of this podcast, will have died from an overdose. Right now, you can't tell the difference on the street from a real or fake pill. So Wesley, in 2005, when I was a college kid in South Carolina and had Adderall, someone stole it from me out of my medicine cabinet. Okay, I did go find replacement Adderall because I couldn't get an A on a final without it.
Yeah.
If I had bought 10 Adderall on the street today and I was a junior at Carolina, I'd be dead because about 10 street pills right now contain fentanyl.
How many did you say? 1 out of 10?
7 out of 10 street pills. So 7 out of 10 contain fentanyl, enough to kill you. And so we've developed a program that ranges from a prevention playbook to drug disposal to PSAs to locker room presentations to parents' presentations. It hits about four arcs of the prevention circle. and it uses high school coaches as the apparatus in terms of 70% of the problems begins between 13 and 19. And so that is political problem solving, political campaigns mixed with policy in an AG's office in terms of how do you actually make a difference. And so to me, making a difference and significance isn't that winning and losing on the first Tuesday in November, the first Tuesday in June. It is really, you know, how do you seek a challenge and what difference are you making in your kingdom building?
That's amazing, man. So we have not, I don't believe, talked about it on this podcast, but I said it a while ago in 2004, about 3 weeks before the DeMint Tenenbaum election. So it was a general election at this point. My mother died of an overdose of, she had both, it was ruled an accidental overdose, but she had enough fentanyl and oxy in her system to have killed her, but they deemed it a lethal combination of fentanyl and oxy. So this has been an issue near and dear to my heart for, God, 20 years. God, has it been, this year will be 20 years? She died 20 years ago. It's hard to believe.
You know, and it's one where, you know, years is a tough issue. And I think it's one where I go back personally, this is where we have a bond on this, and that Dead Moms Club. I lost my mom when I was 14. Yeah. I end up involved in politics, you know, and it's really one when you look at forward, I would say this from a war campaign, war story, and to Politico's looking at this, your aspiration should not be shows like House of Cards. Your aspiration should be that moment that you decided you wanted to get involved for a candidate. And that reason, not to be Doug Stamper, that reason was something, whether it's an overdose, whether it's cancer, whether it's some broader issue that got you first involved in politics. And so probably getting to where you want to go before we end up. So I remember, look, we all have our red letter days. I had my defenestration, took a fall for what happened on January 6th. Yeah. And one of those lessons to other operatives on this call to always pay attention to detail and know everything happening in your organization.
Yeah.
And so, look, a lot of people, it's easy not to take responsibility. The right thing to do, whether it's good or bad, you know, hard or easy, is to take responsibility for good, bad, and ugly. And not to go into anything on the former president or J6 or anything else. I literally had that moment afterwards right at a staff call. I kind of wish I'd handled a staff call differently, where I asked everyone on the staff for that moment you first got involved in politics. And to go back to that moment, and that moment has nothing to do with White House parties. It has nothing to do with pomp and circumstance. It has everything to do with that sixth grade version of democracy.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get to when you're in literally the throes of battle, but it's something that we all have to remember. And we also have to remember within that, there's a responsibility to seek those challenges, but also to say, okay, am I chasing success or am I chasing significance?
You know, I think that's wise, very wise words, Adam, maybe some of the wisest words spoken on this podcast, because we see a lot of people getting into politics now for the money, for the power, for the glory. You saw a lot of people, I think, on the last Trump campaign who were just kind of leeches and not jumping in this for the right reasons. And, you know, I got in it. We both got in it for different reasons. I got in it because I was a welfare kid and I wanted to change the world. I thought I could change the world for all those other welfare kids. But to your point, despite them being massive liberals, we need more West Wing, less House of Cards. Yeah, you know, all those characters in the West Wing were passionate and they cared and got into it for the right reason. Less House of Cards, more West Wing.
I'll say this, bipartisanship's not dead. You know, Friday of last week, so March 8th, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, at the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. I have three attorneys general. I have Keith Ellison, who's pretty far left from Minnesota. I have Todd Rapita, who's pretty you know, far on the right side. I have Alan Wilson, all speaking on the same stage on the same issue on my National Child ID program.
That's awesome.
The fact that you can still build coalitions today, despite what they tell you on MSNBC or Fox News or CNN or One America or Newsmax, et cetera, there are still issues like human trafficking, like overdoses, where you can work across the line. And, you know, it's also important. We both have friends on both sides of the aisle. And some of the people, if we fast forward to your time in the Senate, my time in the AG's office, some of the people we work most closely with were not our Republican competitors or allies. You know, it's folks like Thomas McElveen, who just announced his retirement.
I know. I
hate that. One of the good dudes.
He is such a great human being.
And so I think the other lesson in all this is your relationships follow you. But also when you actually go from the campaign trail to the office side, whether it's legislative, you know, or executive, you're forced to have a relationship-based economy that includes people that are with you in June, but also people that are not going to be with you in November.
Yep. Well, Adam, you're spot on, brother. I think we've kept people for a long time. We're going to have a part two. You alluded to your time at RAGA and some of the January 6th stuff. We should have a whole podcast to talk about that. And how that went down, and about extreme ownership and your extreme ownership and exceptional leadership, and taking some of the blame and fall on that, man. And I really do mean that. I mean, that's what leadership and ownership is all about, man. But man, I love you. We've been friends for a long time, so let's do this again.
All right, thank you.
All right, brother.
Thanks, and bye.
Thank you for listening to Campaign War Stories. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get new episodes sent straight to your inbox by subscribing at wesleydonahue.com. I hope you have a phenomenal day full of positive vibes.